So, dude, how, you're in Japan,
Yep.
but you were born in the US, right?
Yeah, I'm American.
So, how'd you end up in Japan?
The airplane.
Yeah,
Yeah, Bush got reelected, so I said, fuck it.
really?
And then he got reelected again, but his name was Obama.
Well, when Obama got elected, well, before that, I mean, it was going against McCain, and a friend of mine, a very close friend, we were in my basement and we were like watching on the internet, and we were literally talking about, hey, we should go up to Canada, if McCain wins. And then, life happens, and you're like, oh, okay, Obama won, and he's a change, and blah, blah, blah. And then, same old crap,
No, I wasn't like change. I knew he was crap because I saw
Well,
his Senate record.
here's the thing, man. Since like 99 or 2000, my cousin got me into whatreallyhappened.com, like, from the beginning.
Cool.
And I would just watch, I go to that every other
I'm
day,
the
and I just kind
sub,
of.
the last, next week I'll have this show for like 5 days.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
You know
And
I'm Mike Rivera's sub, right?
I had no idea. I just keep seeing your videos on the website, and I'm like, who's this dude? He knows so much about like all the things that I'm always like, why is it like this and why is it like that? And so how did you end up meeting him? Like how'd
I
that
never met
come
him.
out? Huh. Because he's in Hawaii, right?
Yeah.
That's
He
amazing.
was in like Massachusetts or something back when I knew him, but I've never met him in person.
Wow.
I've been on, he's had a bunch of different radio shows and I've been on all of them. And then I've been his sub for a few years.
That's
Where
pretty
he's on
neat.
GCN and now on, I mean RBN, now GCN.
And like, how'd your, I mean, a little bit about your background, man, and people listening out there don't know much about you, but have seen your videos and stuff. You know so much. Like, is it just that you research the heck out of things, or like, talk a little bit about your background. Like, how do you know so much about 9/11? And I also heard the Eddie Bravo episode you've done.
Oh yeah, that was fun.
It's just that you know so much. Like, how'd you get there, man?
Just a nerd. I pretty much just research the heck out of everything and I ignore charlatans. I don't even waste my time with it. People say, well, some of it's true and a lot of it's BS. I mean, well, if a lot of it's BS, then I don't really need it. I just go straight to primary sources as much as possible. And
Doesn't that sometimes make you mentally tired? Because you go from one link to another link to another link, and I mean, how do you know, for example, okay, this is where I'll accept as the truth, and the rest is just hogwash, so to speak. Because
well,
I just get confused. That's why actually one reason why I'm glad you're on the podcast, because I just get, for example, like when 9/11 happened shortly after Michael Moore came out with his movie, his documentary, whatever, Fahrenheit, was it 9/11 or whatever?
yeah.
And I watched it. I was like, oh, this is so awesome. But then later on, my cousin's like, but he didn't mention anything about Zionists or, the dancing Israelis or anything. I'm like, damn, how come I don't pick that up? And then later on, I
She
watched
also
Loose.
didn't say anything about the anthrax or correctly connected to Iraq.
That's what I'm saying. So like, but when I watched it, because since I don't know, I thought, hey, that's the truth. Yeah, hey, well, how come these questions weren't answered? And I just accepted as the new truth. But for example, then I later on, years later, I watched a documentary, Loose Change. And then I watched that brought a little bit more critique into it. I'm like, yeah, this is the truth. But then you critique that in Eddie Bravo's
That was the
podcast.
worst movie I've ever seen on 9/11. They get everything wrong.
So I don't even, and dude, so first of all, I just
Like,
wanted to
even
thank you,
Michael
man.
Moore's film was better than that trash.
Really?
Loose Change is terrible. I mean,
So
that movie, along with Alex Jones, created the stigma about the conspiracy on 9/11. I mean, the reason it takes, you have to basically prove you're not one of those before you can start talking to anyone intelligent about 9/11 because they've heard all that bullshit already and they don't want to hear about it. Saying
Wow.
there's a missile hit the Pentagon and all that crap. Because you just sound crazy. And so when you talk about an event, it's already hard enough to talk about conspiracies, because of all the dumb stuff about Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster, stupid conspiracies.
Yeah.
Even the Kennedy assassination, we got idiots out there blaming his wife and stuff like that. So, Loose Change, just a bunch of idiots that got suckered into spreading disinformation. And of course, Alex picked it up and rolled with it because it was the kosher version of 9/11. And it just, everything they said in the entire film was wrong.
Wow.
But what are your thoughts? It was very well distributed. And that's why I made War by Deception. Like, I'd already written it. And then I go, damn, I have to make a movie now to counteract that horrible film I just saw, because it was taken over. Everybody was believing in loose change, and everybody that was really naive or young or something, people who worked in the Pentagon, people who work in government and journalists, they weren't buying into loose change, but a lot of people did. And I understand why. I mean, they, at least the kids, you know, they grew up, they knew that they were lied to about both Iraq wars, and they know the government is full of it. So they assume, well, we know the government's not true. So the first thing to come around and go, the government's not true, what really happened was this. They just fell for it because they wanted to believe that, you know, a lot of people get suckered into this false dichotomy of only being two theories. There's the government theory and this other non-government theory. And I'm going to go with that because I know I can't trust the government. Mm-hmm. It's just as silly as hating Republicans and then running to the Democrats as if that's the only alternative. And unfortunately, that's how a lot of people think, and they fell for it.
Yeah, because I think Loose Change is even on Netflix.
Of course it is. So, you know how that got financed, you know, right?
Who, Netflix? or the Loose Change guys?
They didn't pay for that crap.
So those who guys, financed them?
One of them got busted for heroin, and the other one's delivering pizzas now. And
really?
I don't know what Dylan's doing. It just, they're losers, and they got just, that was the worst film on 9/11 I've ever seen, besides the no plane stuff. That, okay, that's worse than Loose Change, but I don't think that did as much damage to Loose Change because they went too over the top with the cuckoo stuff. Mm-hmm. That it was so stupid that basically everyone knows it's disinformation. But Loose Change and Alex Jones, they're more deadly because they're somewhat believable if you just don't think about it very much.
Mm-hmm.
And so that motivated me to make a film because they didn't say anything about the Israeli role or the anthrax, or all they said about PNAC was Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld. None of them were writers in PNAC, by the way. Just, they quoted Wikipedia for facts. They said Flight 93 was shot down. They said a missile at the Pentagon. They talked about pods on the bottom of the planes. No phone calls. It was just so stupid from the start to finish. And they made like three versions, and all of them made the same mistakes.
What's the name of your documentary?
War by Deception.
Isn't that like Mossad's?
Version.
Like...
I have an ADHD version.
I'm looking at it right now. 9/11 War Deception. Ryan Dawson War. Yeah, 2013.
Yeah, I did it in 2008, though.
So, what are your thoughts on Alex Jones?
Jesus.
Is he genuinely just like that, or is he like a paid shill? Because he makes a conspiracy out of everything.
He's not a paid shill in the sense of like some intelligence organizations paying him.
Uh-huh.
But he is an opportunist bullshit artist that knows how to sell fear to make money. He's like a televangelist, you know,
like Pat Robertson.
People that sincerely believe in theology, and then there are televangelists who found a business opportunity in religion, and that's what he's doing. He's, everything is a conspiracy to him, and he exaggerates everything. He'll take something that's true and then run with it to the highest extreme. So he'll say, like, cloud seeding is real. And it is. Mm-hmm. Like, we can do that. We've been doing it for almost 50 years. And he'll take something like, look, they tried to seed the clouds in Vietnam. Therefore, earthquake machines and total weather control and blah, 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 blah. He took one time there was a riot in London or something, and he went on TV later saying the people in the UK are beating old women and burning buildings every day.
What?
That's what he said. Said Google can control you with by flickering your light bulbs or something and control your mind. He said the same thing about video games, and he had those pseudoscientific bullshit about beta waves and stuff. And like Y2K is going to kill us all. It was supposed to set off a nuclear reactor or something. He blamed the Oklahoma City bombing on Iraq. And of course, The one that pisses me off the most is how much he apologizes for Israel. Now, part of that is because there was a group of hardcore, like, white separatist types that just dogged on Alex Jones all day because he wouldn't talk about Israel. Of course, mm-hmm. they're even worse than he is because they're bunch of racist white guys, you know? And that probably turned him off to it. But, I mean, he's had years. And, you know, Israel routinely bombs Gaza. I mean, he hasn't even explained to his viewers that there's an occupation in the West Bank. I mean, step one, Israel racially colonizes the Palestinians. They literally take bulldozers, knock down their houses, build Jewish-only cities with Jewish-only roads. I mean, there's supposedly all these European Jews are escaping Germany because it's, the Germans wanted to have a racial homeland, and they went and created a racial homeland of their own. It's just so backwards. And I mean, he can't even tell people that Palestine's occupied. He does this Amy Goodman bullshit where he said it's like treats it like some even complicated struggle, and they've been fighting for thousands of years. No, Israel was created in the 40s, and they're fighting because they annex land, shoot children, blockade Gaza Strip, and occupy the West Bank. So simple.
Yeah, I get a little skeptical when a supposed news anchor or whatever doesn't mention this, the fact, you know. Israel apartheid.
Fired, but Alex won't get fired. He's his own boss. He just won't talk about it.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you're
in,
you're
quote unquote shekels.
You're independent, yet you don't mention a peep about that. And that's one thing. My cousin, I keep referring to my cousin because he's the one who he reads up more about things. So he mentioned, because I was like, hey man, have you seen Alex Jones? I mean, this was like 10 years ago. Have you seen this guy, man? He's saying this and this. He's like, yeah, but you know, if he doesn't say anything about the Zionist regime and like doesn't mention anything about that, I kind of, you know, I get a little skeptical of that person.
Not talking about Israel with 9/11 or Iraq is like not mentioning Germany in World War II. You cannot do it. I guess so, you could just talk about the Pacific Theater with Japan even there. I mean, it's like worse than that even then. So
yeah.
And he avoids it like the plague, though.
Where do you want to
talk about Building 7 over and over?
Well, let's talk. What do you want to, I mean, where can we start with 9/11? Like, who started it? You know, how was it, you know, I guess, planned?
Whatever you want. I usually start with why they did it.
Let's do it. Let's start from the beginning.
We can do that, or we can work backwards. Either way, I usually start with why, and I, because to me, the war in Iraq is a lot worse than the actual event of 9/11. When you're talking about dead people, you're talking about a million dead Iraqis, 5,000 or 6,000 Americans. And a lot of hundreds of Europeans and stuff, too. And just a whole generation of people have had their lives up, turned upside down. And there never would have been that second war in Iraq without 9/11. And there never would have been a war in Afghanistan, which is still going on, without 9/11. And so I usually start with that to say, why does it matter? Because I actually have people say, well, that was almost 14 years ago. So what? So what? We're in Syria right now because of that. We're going back to Iraq right now because of that. And we're still in Afghanistan right now because of that. And the same people who were part of 9/11 and lying about 9/11 are who associated it to Afghanistan and Iraq and tried to associate it to Syria. The same exact people. And so that's why it matters. And why they did it was obvious. I mean, they were just, the war on terror replaced the Cold War to justify trillions of dollars in spending for the military-industrial complex. And that's not even hidden. I mean, these people wrote policy papers about what they wanted to do and why they wanted to do it before they did it. A modern Mein Kampf.
And that stuff is public? Are people going to find it online?
Yeah. They brag about it. I mean, the Project for a New American Century wrote so many papers in between the two Gulf Wars talking about why they wanted to attack Iraq. They actually had one paper titled How to Attack Iraq. It was from November 16th, 1998.
Wow.
Years before 9/11, and it talked about weapons of mass destruction and all that other crap. And I want to point out, too, this is before the EU existed, before the euro existed, because some people say, well, Saddam was going to put them off the dollar, the petrodollar, this and that. It's a very Eurocentric view of things to try and make it look like they actually matter. It had nothing to do with the petrodollar. Saddam was not putting his oil on the petrodollar, and they were trying to go to war with Iraq before the EU or the euro existed. So that had nothing to do with it. It was for Israeli interests. It was written by Israelis. It was in Israeli policy papers and Israeli think tanks who wrote about every single pre-war lie in Iraq. And it was Israeli security forces who claimed to have witnessed a transfer of anthrax from Iraqi senior officials to Mohammed Atta, a 9/11 hijacker, in a meeting in Prague. And there was no meeting in Prague. Iraq didn't have any anthrax. Al-Qaeda didn't have any anthrax. They never met with Mohammed Atta. How do you witness a transfer of anthrax at a meeting that didn't take place? Well, of course, they didn't witness it. They lied. And James Woolsey and Gary Schmidt wrote about it in Robert Kagan and William Crystal's outfits, the Weekly Standard, PNAC's newspaper there, sponsored by Lockheed Martin, by the way, largest aerospace company. Wow. That gets all the contracts from Iraq. They just lied. And the other thing that pisses me off is these leftists that say, this is blowback. This is unintended consequences. They're just so incompetent and inept. No, it is not blowback. This is on purpose. They wanted to divide Iraq up into Sunni, Shiite, and Kurdish areas. And the reason I know that for a fact is because the Israelis wrote about it. Oded Yanan wrote about it. Israel Sharak translated it into English. And verbatim stated they wanted to divide Iraq up into sectarian violence with Sunni, Kurdish, and Shiite areas and get them to fight each other because every Arab-on-Arab conflict benefits Israel. They reiterated that again in another policy paper called the Israeli Clean Break Papers with Richard Perle, who worked in the Defense Department and was also involved in all these pre-invasion lies about Iraq, talking about how they had to topple Saddam and then move on into Syria. Which is what they're doing. It is not blowback. This is the plan. They didn't screw up. They wanted Iraq to be a failed state because it was a threat to Israel's hegemony.
Under Saddam. Yeah, because
Saddam used to help the Palestinians.
But okay, so how did it go from PNAC and these guys to actual government, you know, Bush, his
PNAC
regime?
PNAC is in the government. Paul Wolfowitz is in PNAC, and he was in the government. He was the Deputy Secretary of Defense. Richard Perle was the chairman of the Defense Policy Board in PNAC and in the Pentagon. Douglas Feith, who created the Office of Special Plans, worked in the Pentagon and was a writer for PNAC. Wow. They are the government. These aren't just some Israeli partisans that are Zionist hacks that write a bunch of crap in their own newspaper. Mm-hmm. They're government officials, not the elected part of the government, the selected part of the government. They were the government. Louis Libby was Dick Cheney's chief of staff, lawyer for the Mossad agent Mark Rich. He's in the government. He's in PNAC, right?
Wow.
And told a number of lies. And the girl he was dating, Judith Miller, was a New York Times reporter that wrote about the aluminum tubes lie, the mobile weapons labs lie that had VX gas and sarin and anthrax,
wow,
which they built upon. I mean, yeah.
God. And Bush
that's
had
how
just
gotten the government. They are the government.
God.
But it wasn't Bush and Rumsfeld. Like the couple guys loose chains throws out there, they didn't write any of these things.
So it was all the people that were around them that they selected.
It was the Pentagon officials. They had a special office in the Pentagon called the Office of Special Plans. It was created by Richard Perle and Douglas Feith. Feith was the sort of the office leader of it. And their job was to work with the government in waiting, the Iraqi National Congress, with a bank fraud convicted felon, Ahmed Chalabi, who ended up being the oil minister later, and sort of the vice prime minister. They were just supposed to peddle lies, which really weren't unique because they were the same lies these same people had been writing all through the 90s. Only they quoted these people as sources like they were brand new. They're like, ah, this time they really do have weapons of mass destruction. Oh, they really do have chemical weapons under the palaces of Saddam. That's something William Sapphire wrote about in the New York Times, but it had been written before by Schmidt and Kagan in William Crystal's outfit for PNAC. They just got other people to say the same stuff they've been saying and then had people like Judith Miller quote it in the New York Times and go, ah, ha, see this? It's in the New York Times. But it was just a big triangle between the INC, the people in the Pentagon, and the New York Times. They were just quoting each other with stuff they made up. There was one lie about yellow cake uranium, you know, oxidized uranium, which you need for a nuclear weapon, that they said Saddam was acquiring from the Congo and Niger. Well, in Niger, they forged the obsolete foreign minister's name on the document. So there's no way he signed any of that because he wasn't even there. It'd be like if you had a document today with the Obama administration and it was signed by Gerald Ford, who's dead,
JFK,
you know,
or something.
JFK or Ronald Reagan or something. You know, like, it's not even possible. James Baker, you know, like the Secretary of Treasury in the '80s. That's how dumb it was. And CIA knew this, and they said, "Get rid of it." And the Office of Special Plans just went with it anyway. And then Bush reiterated it in a couple of speeches within the State of the Union address. He did another speech in Ohio and so on. And this started a little battle between the CIA versus kind of the Cheney office. And because the CIA is evil too, but they're not dumb. Mm-hmm. Whereas the neocons are evil and dumb.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, they went with the neocon strategy because it was all over Fox News and MSNBC and stuff. And then, so Condi Rice and Dick Cheney both went on different networks and quoted this crap about mushroom clouds and WMDs and reconstituting nuclear weapons. And it was all lies. He wasn't reconstituting nuclear weapons. The aluminum tubes that Miller talked about were the wrong size, had nothing to do with it or anything. And then his year forgeries are so bad. And it's not something you can blame it on competence. You can't accidentally forge someone's name on a document who's not even there. They just were lying. But what happened was, instead of going through normal channels, we went right to this special Israeli cabal in the Pentagon, the Office of Special Plans, and then it hit the newsrooms from there. They had a meeting later. And this is after the Iraq War had already started, unfortunately. But like my congressman, Walter Jones from North Carolina, he was the only Republican there, by the way. He met with all these intelligence officials in the Congress to go over how things got screwed up. You had Colin Powell's chief of staff there, Larry Wilkerson. He was so embarrassed. And Wayne White from the State Department and Paul Pillar from the CIA, et cetera. All the guys you need to talk to, the Iraqi intelligence analysts. Wayne White said they didn't even know about the Office of Special Plans until about 6 months before the war started. And because they've been lying for years. And Paul Pillar said that at one of the select committee hearings for intelligence, they found out that there were two different briefings, the one they got and the one the Office's Plans was giving to only certain people. And it was one of the staffers for Dianne Feinstein who showed him the extra slides that they were not getting, and showing how they were cooking up fabricated intelligence, not just cherry-picked, straight-up fabricated intelligence about Iraq to try and say Iraq was linked to Al-Qaeda, when the actual analyst had said, no, there is no link between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, and there wasn't. They hated each other. Now they're there killing Iraqis today. It's just, oh. But they blamed it on oil, they blamed it on all this stuff, and they didn't look at who actually literally wrote the lies about anthrax, sarin gas, weapons of mass destruction, all that. And the anthrax was key because that was the speech Colin Powell made to the UN to sell the war. The legal reason to invade Iraq was that they were in violation of UN Resolution 1441, which stipulated no WMDs, and specifically anthrax. And Colin Powell went there, a little mock bottle of anthrax, and gave his speech and pointed to a bunch of pictures of cartoon trucks and cartoon this and that, because they didn't have any real photos because they didn't actually exist and Iraq didn't actually have anthrax. But it had been associated to Al-Qaeda because right after 9/11, somebody who wrote, you know, Allah is great, death to America, death to Israel, sent on these notes, and 9/11 written at the top, sent anthrax to some U.S. senators and a bunch of journalists. And they killed seven people. And this is what got me, is the journalists, they sent two different types of anthrax, hoax anthrax and actual anthrax. Hoax anthrax was sent to Judith Miller, the lady in the New York Times lying about everything, and who now works for Fox after she got out of jail for the Plame affair. Actual anthrax was sent to Tom Daschle and Patrick Leahy, the guys, the head of the Judiciary Committee, the people in the Senate who would be able to prevent the Patriot Act, and also who wanted to investigate 9/11. Because before the 9/11 Commission, they had this joint inquiry with the Senate Intelligence Committees to look into 9/11, which is where the infamous 28 pages comes. Blah, I'll get back to that anyway. But this anthrax, everyone thought, well, it's from Al-Qaeda because they signed it. you know, death to America, death to Israel, Allah is great with 9/11 on the top.
Oh my God.
Problem is, the anthrax was physically traced back to the America's own labs. And Iraq didn't have any anthrax, and neither did Al-Qaeda. But it was mailed from the areas out of Florida and New Jersey where Al-Qaeda sells the, you know, the flight school hijackers and stuff had been living. So whoever sent the anthrax knew where these people had been. So you put it together. Let's see. The note says, death to America, death to Israel. It's the Israelis who lied about seeing anthrax being given to Muhammad Atta in Prague by Iraq. And then we find out the Israelis are living next door to Muhammad Atta in Florida, where, you know, all four pilots were. One of them was in California briefly, but the whole cell for Flight 11 basically was in Florida. And the Israelis live right beside them. And then the anthrax is sent from the same area. And it says, death to Israel on the note. P.S. We're evil Muslims, you know. It was way over the top. Yeah. It gets traced back to U.S. labs. Now, here's the kicker. Back in 1993, there was also an attack on the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
And in that attack, there was also a plan to blow up the Holland Tunnel, but it never happened. But they royally botched it because the guy the FBI was setting up to do it had been recording his phone calls with the FBI because he's suspicious. And they told him that he would be giving these terrorists fake powders and material for explosives.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they gave him the real stuff, you know, and they ended up blowing up a Ryder truck. Fortunately, it was parked in the wrong place and it didn't take the tower down. It wasn't deep enough in where it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But they were ready to blame the Muslim Brotherhood for that whole thing and didn't explain how they had actually made the bomb themselves and provided them with the material and everything else. And the address for the Ryder truck went back to this lady, Josie Hadass, because the guy's so stupid and innocent because he thinks it's a sting operation. Like, he thinks, oh, I'm just pretending to be a terrorist to catch these other terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
So he put down the actual place where he was staying and went back to this Israeli lady who was a Mossad agent who fled the country. And there's all this material evidence all over the apartment. And, of course, this is sort of pre-internet, so that info didn't go anywhere. But anyway, a month before the attack, anthrax had been stolen out of Fort Detrick, Maryland by this guy named Dr. Philip Zachariah, or Philip Zach. And he had a cohort named Dr. Rippey, and she wasn't fired. The reason he was fired wasn't for stealing anthrax. The reason he was fired was because he was such an overt racist to one of his coworkers. He had an Arab coworker, and he put this racist poem in his locker and a blow-up camel with a dildo on it. Just a stupid juvenile.
Hell?
Yeah. He's supposed to be a scientist, right? But anyway, he had like a group of Israelis who were all picking on this guy. And anyway, he got fired, but they have him on tape going back into the labs. Rippey lets him in at night. He's doing research on anthrax, and all this anthrax disappears, right? So it's just the timing where you have an attack on the World Trade Center and a stolen anthrax. And later you have another attack on the World Trade Center and an anthrax attack. And here's the kicker. The same guy wrote an anonymous letter trying to blame the Arab coworker he got fired for messing with. Mm-hmm. He tried to blame him for the anthrax. And from looking at the writing and everything, they knew exactly who it was. But the problem is, none of the anthrax letters had been opened yet. He sent this kind of anonymous letter trying to pin it on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Who didn't do it because he wasn't even in the area at all. He couldn't have mailed it because he wasn't there, so they knew he was innocent. But he tried to pin it on this guy, and I'm sorry, I forget the Arab guy's name, Hamad something or another.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter, really. So how did he know anthrax had even been mailed again in 2001? Because the anthrax had been sent, but it hadn't been opened because all the airplanes were grounded on 9/11, including the mail, and you know, it took a long time, and so they didn't really open anything until October. Mm-hmm. And yet, he had sent this letter in September, and it got open, and trying to blame somebody for anthrax attacks, and everyone's like, what anthrax attacks? And then there were actual anthrax attacks. Now, Did the FBI investigate Dr. Philip Zack? No. They chased around Stephen Hatfield for 5 years. He won a £5 million settlement. Then they blamed it all on Bruce Ivins, who ended up getting suicided before his trial, which I predicted, by the way, and died of a Tylenol overdose. And that was it. And then he was exonerated after his death because he physically didn't have the equipment to make the kind of weaponized anthrax that was used. He also could not have been going to Florida and New Jersey so quickly without flying. And there's no flight records for Bruce Ivins ever going there. So, I mean, he was exonerated, but he was dead. So they say, okay, then if he didn't do it, who did it? But no, they just blamed it on him. He died. And then to hell with him being exonerated after his death. They're not interested in who actually sent the anthrax because they know who sent the actual anthrax. Swag Bowman had all the Ames strain anthrax, which is housed in Ames, Iowa, destroyed. Physically destroyed. They physically destroyed anthrax in the middle of an anthrax investigation. Because they knew it's theirs. They knew that. And I think there's some miscommunication there. Like, you know, all the bioweapons guys want their money too. But, jeez. They were trying to associate it with Iraq, and that was the original lie that the Israelis did. And it worked. Mm-hmm. Because they did associate it with Iraq. Even after they had proven, okay, it's not Al-Qaeda or Iraq, and they started looking at Stephen Hatfield and Bruce Ivins as suspects because they knew it had to be domestic, the lies about Iraq continued. They still talked about mobile weapons labs with anthrax and yada, yada, yada. It's like it was so sloppy. It was so see-through to anybody paying attention to this stuff that they were lying about everything. And I knew about it, but it was frustrating. Like, what was I supposed to do? There was no YouTube back in 2003. There was no Facebook. There was no MySpace. Like, write in my local school paper or something. Like, I knew exactly what they were doing and felt completely helpless because it's not like you can just go on TV and say, he's lying, and this is how we know. Mm-hmm. Every single talking head on every channel just straight up lied. They still lie. They read Pentagon talking points. It doesn't work as well now because, like what we're doing now, people just come on and say they're lying about ISIS. Da, 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 da. But back in 2001, 2, and 3, you just couldn't do that.
Yeah, it's...
There's the internet. You can make a web page, but how do you get people there? You know, how do people know it's around? Yeah, which Google is how I finally got associated with Mike Rivero. And he's been a savior for me because he has all this traffic. And I have a lot of information that I like to get out. And he recognized that. And he was one of the first, not the first, but he was one of the first large media networks to link to my paper about called Iraq 9/11, PNAC, All Roads Lead to Israel, which was the precursor to my film on 9/11.
Wow. It's like these idiots got their playbook from Looney Tunes, but the sad thing is that it worked. You know, like, I'm assuming that's partly because...
it's been working. I mean, the stuff they said about the first Gulf War was even dumber. And the stuff they said in the 80s, we invaded Grenada. Grenada. Well, I guess it's got grenade in the name. Just saying communist, and they would just attack anybody. Just say the word communist, red. They hit Honduras, Guatemala. Like, name a Central American country they got invaded by the United States, besides Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. I think all the rest of them did. Nicaragua, you know. They didn't even try with their lies. Vietnam, Gulf of Tonkin, that was BS. But prior to the internet, you could do that. There were only like 3 channels on TV, and they would just get up there in a very authoritarian way and say something, and the old Johnny Appleseed and Sally Soccer Mom just said, yeah, well, government said so. You know, it was that bad. Iran-Contra. Actually, they got busted. But the only reason they got busted is when the planes crashed full of drugs and guns.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been doing it for at least 4 years. And just... So, yeah, they have to get better with their lies now because of the internet, but we still have to hold their feet to the fire. Even in 2008, which is post-modern internet, they still got away with a huge financial scandal, bailing out all these financial institutions. When you add it all up, it was like $16 trillion from the Federal Reserve, and then another few trillion dollars from Obama in his stimulus package and his bailout package. But they were very clever about that because the numbers for the government bailout and the stimulus were separated into two numbers. And then the Fed secret bailout, which we learned from the GOA audit, just they didn't even talk about that at all. It wasn't on TV when it should have been on TV. Everyone got obsessed with Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and just ignored the biggest, largest financial scandal in the history of the world. Because it was a sexy story. This guy literally from theater who's getting documented cables leaked from a homosexual soldier, Bradley Manning or Chelsea or whatever she's calling itself today. I don't mean it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They just, the left just jumped on that gay soldier leaks doc. But all he was saying was no shit Sherlock stuff. Like, Americans killed civilians in Iraq. They killed, really? That's really, you need a WikiLeaks to tell you that? I was not impressed. But anyway, the biggest financial scandal in the history of the world, and everyone talked about WikiLeaks, and then Michael Jackson died, and it just one thing after another. They never really got back around that audit. Everyone's like, we should audit the Fed. Like, it did audit the Fed. They found out they just created another $16 trillion in wealth and gave it to Goldman Sachs. And I mean, I listed them all in my book and Separation of Business and State. And just, I'm tearing my hair out over here. I think the most angry video I've ever made. And I made some angry ones when that crap happened and nobody would talk about it. I just couldn't. I thought all the Ron Paul people would jump on it at least, you know. And some of them did, but it just, yeah. Oh well, do what you can.
Yeah, dude, what you're doing is awesome. Okay, so dude, let's talk about the actual hijackers. How did they even get them? Where, you know, there were like these idiot Arabs are saying they're Muslims, and they were like at clubs and drinking and strippers and stuff. Like, out of the 19 hijackers, what?
Well,
15 or Saudi Arabia.
I don't buy into that they were at the clubs and strippers and drinking stuff, because those stories came from the people at the bar and from the flight schools who, all these flight schools were involved in running drugs during Iran-Contra and stuff, and getting diamonds out for the Pat Robertson super Christians out of Africa and stuff. So I cannot confirm or deny that information, but I do know that a lot of these hijackers totally did hate the United States. They were in the USS Cole bombing. They had been used. They're useful idiots. Something people have to understand about terrorist cells is they're financed by the United States and Saudi Arabia, and sometimes mm-hmm. NATO, but those are the principal two. And Saudi Arabia is a client state of the U.S. anyway, so they're American. When the Mujahideen's fighting the Russians, they're good guys. When they're in Kosovo or Serbia or somewhere where we want them to terrorize somebody, they're good guys. When they attack our embassies in Africa or something like that, then they're bad guys. But we have a look-away list of our own privateers. There are straight-up mercenary-style terrorists, too. And a privateer is the privateers were pirates that got secret state assistance and were paid. But I just call terrorists modern privateers on the land, or air, too, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these guys were able to enter the U.S. with their real names and everything and get FBI protection. What? Because once they're in the U.S., they leave the CIA's sphere, technically. They got protection because they're either we're trying to turn them or they're already one of our guys who we mm-hmm. use to recruit and finance and use those terrorists against our own enemies. And they do it because we'll just use in America for their money and guns while we kill our, you know, fellow Muslims that aren't our brand of Islam or whatever, whoever they're shooting at. Mm-hmm. They're all trying to use each other, you know. But Al-Hazmi and Al-Midhar were living in California, and they knew, the CIA knew that they were at this Malaysian summit meeting with Al-Qaeda, talking to all the Al-Qaeda leaders who were already bad guys at that point because they had blown up our embassies in Kenya and stuff. And this let them fly to the United States and didn't do anything, didn't arrest them, and they were getting financed through Bandar Bush's wife was paying this other lady who was paying them. And then they met up with Hanjour, who was the pilot for, was 77? Yeah. He'd been in the U.S. since 1998. When they say these guys are at these flight schools and they couldn't fly and blah, blah. Ask them when they started training, when someone gives you that crap, because they don't know. They were there for years and years learning how to fly. So all you got to do is know how to land a plane. That's it. If you can, or not even land, get close to landing the plane and you can hit the Pentagon. Hitting the World Trade Center is a little bit more difficult because they're barely wider than the plane is. But anyway, it's not like it's a stupid argument to say someone wouldn't have the skill to hit it. I mean, I hate that stuff because we have so much more damning, condemning, A-grade level arguments than could someone use a phone or not on a plane, or how good was this guy at flying or not. I mean, plus, you never even know if they even had to bring the plane in the final mile. They could have been brought in by a beacon. They have the drone tech and stuff, but I don't like to speculate like that. Those kind of specifics don't matter to me. What matters to me is how the CIA and the FBI were shielding these terrorists. Now, part of them are doing it because they think they're our own terrorists that we use. Everybody knows that we use terrorists. We're using Chechens right now. We're using al-Nusra right now. We're using Jandala and MEK, M23 rebels in Africa. Like, we have a lot of terrorists on our payroll. But we don't pay them, like, on a payroll. We pay them indirectly with the black market money created from the war on drugs, which was the whole purpose of going to Afghanistan and liberating $64 billion a year in heroin and opium, morphine too. So I guess opium, which FedEx, by the way, is delivering around the world right now. I just
really,
yeah, talking to some pilots. Not like they want to do it; they just don't ask any questions. They know damn well it's full of opium.
Meaning that they actually fly into Afghanistan, pick it up, and leave.
Yeah, they go in, they get their opium, or they pack it up on a military plane, and it's delivered. And because you can't really go to the Congress and say, we'd like to appropriate X billion dollars to pay a bunch of terrorists, right? Because a lot of congressmen, most of them, would say, no, you can't have it and do that. And if you spend other money, you say, hey, where'd that money go? So the black ops, there is a black ops budget for the CIA, but the scale of what they're doing now requires more cash, and they do it with the war on drugs, which makes drugs more expensive, by the way. And the CIA has been the kingpins of the drug war since the 60s, with the French Connection and beyond. I mean, that they are number one. And, of course, Fast and Furious in Mexico. You know, we shipped all these guns in, and then we had no way to trace and find out where they went.
Yeah.
Which is a lot like, oh, we gave all these guns to the FSA, and, oh, big surprise, ISIS has them now. Like, whatever, you gave guns to ISIS. That's a really lame excuse. You know? It's so clear. I mean, they've been doing that crap over and over again. You do it in North America, it's, you know, it's the same thing in the Middle East. But
so these back to the hijackers, like, so they were already trained, quote unquote, jihadists or mujahideen, whatever, and
Well, they weren't Mujahideen. I mean, the original Al-Qaeda was from the Mujahideen. They were a bunch of foreign fighters in Afghanistan, right? Kind of like the foreign fighters in Syria now. But most of these guys are Saudi Arabian. I think it was Egyptian and Al-Jarrah's from Lebanon. By the way, Jarrah's first cousin. This isn't 33rd degree cousin like Alex Jones says, Kerry and Bush are related. I mean, actual cousin. Actual cousin. 33 degree, I'm probably related to,
freaking George Washington.
Yeah. I actually am related to George Washington.
Oh.
But I'm probably related to Genghis Khan, everyone is, right? Whatever, you know. First degree cousin is busted in Lebanon as a spy for the Israelis. They got his computers and everything out of his apartment. And why is a Mossad agent a first cousins with a 9/11 hijacker?
Wow.
And Jarrah's voice is the only one that's not on the black box in Flight 93. Doesn't even scream Allah's great or anything at the end, you know, when everyone was saying that. And then the proof that he was on Flight 93 is they found his passport. But this is the thing. You can't get to that part where his cousin is busted as a Mossad agent in Lebanon, and there's no proof he was even on the plane other than supposedly they found his passport, which I don't believe. Because jackass will say Flight 93 was shot out of the air, and there's just a tiny hole in the ground, and it didn't really crash, and it landed in Ohio or some other shit. And like, no, it crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. There were plane parts everywhere. What Loose Chain showed was like in the aftermath cleanup crater crew. They had two giant red dumpsters full of plane parts, found the engines, found tons of debris, found the black box. It was used in the trial with Miss Howie. I mean, that's the problem I have with Jonestown and stuff. It's the same thing with the Pentagon. We can't start talking about what we discovered from the debris and the forensic evidence, which lead back to Israel, because they want to say it was shot down in the air and stuff like that. And just ignore all the phone calls and the black box and everything that cooperates with each other and has actual forensic evidence. They want to say somebody, I guess, in an F-16 somewhere went and shot it down and the government lied about that. Why would they? I mean, why would you shoot down Flight 93 when it's supposed to hit Building 7? And then they just blow that one up anyway, and it looks so ridiculous. That was not part of the plan. They really did just take it down. The passengers. There was a judo champion, Jeremy Glick, on board the plane. That's a black swan. They weren't planning on some martial artist being on the plane, you know?
Wow.
Anyway, Jara's cousin... It's a fact that a 9/11 hijacker's cousin worked for the Mossad and was arrested.
What's the guy's name?
The supposed Zaid al-Jarrah and Ali al-Jarrah, that's their names. He was supposedly the pilot on Flight 93. You can look it up. And they found his passport. One of two passports they found. The more ridiculous one was in the debris in New York. Knee-deep dust and whatever, paper passport. I mean, it is possible for paper objects to survive. Like, all kinds of stuff could survive. I mean, you never know. But I mean, the fact you would find it so quickly, and it's only one of five possible passports, and you find that one in the debris that day. And it was given to Bernard Carrick, the chief of police, who got thrown in jail for fraud and is a mobster. And he's the one that tried to cover up the Israelis caught on the George Washington Bridge in a van packed with explosives. Now, all the media outlets reported it because they were called Middle Easterners. And the dancing Israelis were called Middle Easterners. So that's why Dan Rather got up and said that, he talked about the George Washington Bridge bombing and the dancing Israelis, which he said on the David Letterman show later. He talked about them filming it from the Hudson River and all that. So, because he didn't know they were Israelis, it had been reported just as Middle Easterners. But we know for a fact that they were Israelis because they went back to their Urban Moving Systems warehouse, like where they were pulled over in a van that said Urban Moving Systems. And it was a fake moving company. It was a front for the Mossad. Dominic Suter, who owned the outfit, fled back to Israel. He's on the FBI's official list as a 9/11 suspect.
Wow.
Well, you know this story already, right? I mean, Sylvan Kussberg and his brother Paul had a counterintelligence investigation put into them, failed their polygraph test. Odin Elder had over $4,000 stuffed in his sock, highlighted maps in New York. Sivan had been in Doric Towers on September 10th, which is the roof of which where they filmed it from. And he got pulled out of the police lineup by witnesses who asked him what he was doing there, and he lied and said he worked in the building when he didn't. Yaron Schmel lied to the police and tried to say where they were over on the west side when they were not. They were pulled over on Route 3 in East Rutherford, and they tried to act like they were somewhere else when the attack happened, when we know they weren't, because the whole reason they got pulled over was earlier in that morning, a witness had placed them there on Doric Towers, filming and celebrating the events and flicking lighters. It's 72 pictures of it and a green lighter that they were flicking. Now, Mamari was not there that morning. There's three of them dancing and obviously somebody filming, right? There's four of them. Mamari had gotten picked up later, and he was like asleep in the back of the van, so he'd been up doing something prior to that. And all these guys I found out had frequented this place called the White Glove, this strip joint, which same hookers were gave me a bunch of info about Wall Street during that thing anyway. But
oh, wow. It's
a very interesting story. And it just they had passports to go to all different places. You know, they were ready to get out of there. Come on. They worked for an Israeli intelligence company. They're filming the first plane hitting. They're celebrating the attacks. They lied about everything. They could have just said, yeah, we were there and we celebrated because we feel like America's going to attack our enemies now or something. They could have just told said truth, but they didn't. And why they were taking all these photographs, and then the Joint Terrorist Task Force arrested the other guys. And the FBI confiscated their computer hard drives, and all of it got classified. And even the police report about the dancing Israelis was classified. Yet the earlier reports in the media from the Jewish Daily Forward, Army Radio, and ABC had gotten some of the information out. But we didn't have we didn't know how many pictures they had taken and some of that information. I got that from Freedom of Information Act in 2011, which I got the redacted version of the police report. But by combining the stories we already knew from the media about it, I simply counted the letters in their name and filled it in the blanks where they were redacted and basically deduced the whole thing. It took 2 days, but it was worth it. Now, some people get confused and say, and their van had traces of explosives in it.
The
van they were driving around in. The bomb-sniffing dogs, you know, went ape over it. That wasn't the only one, but people get confused and say, well, the George Washington Bridge van was the dancing Israeli van, and they just got confused with the ports and blah, blah, blah. And I say, no, because the dancing Israelis were arrested at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And the George Washington Bridge was 11 o'clock at night. That's why Dan Rather says, and word late tonight, the FBI has two suspects in hand. And word late tonight, he says. You look at the live CBS report, the live CNN report. It's nighttime outside, clearly dark, and they're talking about, and they are filming the George Washington Bridge and talking about the men who got arrested in a truck packed with explosives. So there was no confusion about what had happened at 4 o'clock and what had happened at 11 o'clock at all.
So, but who are the people where they pull them over, and then as soon as the police comes up to them, they said, "We're not your problem"?
That was Sylvan Kusberg. He was one of the dancing Israelis. He says, "We're not your problem. Your problem is our problem. Palestinians are your problem."
Yeah.
Unprovoked. Already knows he's talking about 9/11, already trying to blame Palestinians.
Wow.
See, the cops said somebody had, with bad English, had called in and had given a report saying they saw Palestinian bomb makers at the airport in a van, right? A beige or white van, right? They screwed up in the English because they said, I see them making this. I don't know how you could determine they're Palestinian. Were they waving around Palestinian flags, you know, like Arab by Arab, you know, like whatever. But of course, rather than stopping just the Lincoln Tunnel, they stopped the Lincoln Tunnel, the George Washington Bridge, and the Holland Tunnel. They stopped every entrance that across the river. And in doing so, they caught the George Washington Bridge bombers. They're probably going to blow up the bridge. And the reason I say that is my former boss, the translator for the FBI, Sybil Edmonds, wrote a book called Classified Woman, which I encourage everyone to read. I don't know the page number or whatever, but I highlighted it in my film where this is after 9/11, but they were going over old, I can't tell you whether they were tapes or what it was, but going over old information and discovered these people talking and what they were saying, it was code, but they were talking about 9/11, which after 9/11 was easy to pick out, before 9/11 wasn't so easy to catch, but she catches this and they had sent by courier to Baluchistan, by courier, by like donkey or whatever, not email or anything, blueprints of the World Trade Centers and a bridge, composites and blueprints. Now, since the 93 plan was originally to blow up one tower, knock it into the other, and to blow up the Holland Tunnel, I would assume blowing up the bridge, it must have been the George Washington Bridge where they were busted. They may have been looping back around. Who knows? But never followed through that part of the plan. But the bombs had nothing to do with blowing up the World Trade Center, because they'd all fallen by 11. So they had some follow-up attack coming, and fortunately the cops caught him. Cops actually did something right. The reason they caught him, though, like, how do they know to pull him over? Like, you don't just randomly pull over vans. Pull him over the van because it had the Urban Moving Systems logo on it. Yeah, I had many people in New York tell me they heard that on the radio live that day, too.
Yeah, I was reading that, like, on what really happened, that a lot of these Mossad agents, they would use, like, these undercover moving company names and stuff. And I was, like, wondering, like, why would they use that? But that gives them a right to just be in any state and just say, hey, we're moving. Right?
Well, it's an easy way to transport stuff.
Yeah.
And Zim Shipping Company was one of the tenants that moved out of the World Trade Center, right? They moved out of the World Trade Center just weeks prior and relocated to Virginia. Well, in moving out, you still get to have moving vans come in and out of the World Trade Center. Even though they're leaving with Zim Shipping stuff, doesn't mean they're not bringing anything in.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me to the story of Khalid Abdallah and Hamad Sarfati and those guys.
Well, before you talk about that, what do you think about that? I don't know whether it's rumor, truth, or whatever. I want to get your point of view on this. Where they were saying that 3,000 or 4,000 Jews didn't show up that day to work. Is that just, like, false? What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's bullshit. And it was 400, not 4,000. And it was a claim out of the Jerusalem Post, which is owned by Hollinger Inc., which got in a big scandal with Conrad Black in Canada and everything. And Hollinger Inc., this is in my film too, has a board of directors of three members, Henry Kissinger, Richard Perle, and James R. Thompson.
Wow.
And James R. Thompson was on the 9/11 commission.
Oh, wow.
And Kissinger was originally chosen to lead the 9/11 commission. So two of their board members are supposed to be in the cover-up. They wrote this BS about Jews not going to work to make it look like anybody who was talking about the Israeli role look anti-Semitic. You know, Jews died in 9/11 like everyone else. However, there were some Jewish employees who got a message from Odigo, which was this sort of instant messaging service, I guess Hebrew or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And guess who owned that? Hollinger again. Same paper that owns Jerusalem Post that wrote that stupid story. So, but they came forward and said, we were told to get out of the towers. Before they felt, they said to not go. Somebody had randomly, I don't know if it's because they're Jewish and they're just randomly telling Jews or what, but, or got mixed up. Maybe they had the same name as someone else. Who knows? But, but they were honest about it because they came forward and said, we were warned about the attacks before it happened. Two honest Jewish guys that were told, you know, they were given foreknowledge and got out and their lives were saved because of it, but who warned them? Who sent them those messages? I don't know. The computers were destroyed when the buildings fell down, but I don't know if there's some other way to trace that, but they're not interested in that. I mean, they tried to look up who put all the put options on the airlines, and the DTCC, which processes the short naked shorts, supposed to be illegal, they won't hand it over. Like, subpoena them. No, they're not going to do it.
So...
because it would go right back to the Pentagon is why.
Wow.
Why would the government subpoena itself? But what I don't understand is why the public hasn't demanded it. Well, the public doesn't know about it because all they know about 9/11 is this bullshit from Alex Jones talking about the building filled up too fast. It's like so basic. I'm like, shut up. You're in the way. DTCC should have been subpoenaed. I mean, flat out. There's no excuse. And they kind of were starting an investigation into that, and was it ABC or I don't remember anymore. It petered out though. I mean, there was so much other stuff going on. We were right. We had the Patriot Act coming, and then the war in Iraq, and
church. Well, everything seems so planned out after that. It's just like boom, 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 boom. Like all these things started happening. Like, hold up. Did you have this in mind? Like,
well, yeah. Okay. Here's another example. You just reminded me when you said that. And that is the first hour of that interview. There's another hour and 15 minutes to go. I do want to remind you to click on skinspa.com, the banner, and check out their goods. Order something if you like. Also, please donate to ancreport.com. It keeps the show on the air. It makes the podcast possible, which is also what makes it possible for me to come on fine radio shows like I was just doing. There's another hour and a half, mostly on 9/11. Also gets into some other goodies. Please do donate. I'm trying to save up for a trip to New York to do some work in Ground Zero and some other things. It is absolutely vital. You can sign up for a monthly subscription, $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever. Also, we're selling the End All Aid to Israel t-shirts in the shop section. If you are listening to this on YouTube, you ought to go to ancreport.com, because not only do we have these podcasts on there, but also reports and documentaries and all kinds of other goodies. Stay tuned for the second half of this. You got another hour and 15 minutes to go, and it's just bam, 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 crunching information. I do not hold back. And there may be some info about the Kennedy assassination as well. Stay tuned. The next half will be up in about 3 days, because I've got piles of work to do. And we'll be back at this when I can edit some of the sounds. So click on that little donation button. Please, please, please share with your friends. Don't forget to follow us on SUTSU.co. And if you haven't seen it yet, type in War by Deception right now and watch that movie. Also, the prequel to that, Decades of Deception. Another excellent movie about the CIA and their decades of deception. And they are all on ancreport.com, along with tons of other great documentaries. Go and check it out, folks.